Hi, I'm Femi OK. On this episode of The Stream, we are focusing on Sudan as tribal groups clash in the south of the country and protesters continue to campaign against the military leaders who seized power last year. Could this unrest spread to the rest of the country? It has been a while since we've talked about Sudan on The Stream, so the comment section is right here for your comments, your questions. Feel free to ask our panel anything. Be part of today's show. Welcome back to Hiba, Nasreen and Holud, our expert panel on Sudan. Hiba, please introduce yourself to our international viewers around the world, although if they don't know who you are, I don't know what network they're watching. Good to have you, Hiba. Welcome.
Thank you, Femi. I'm Hiba Morgan, Al Jazeera's correspondent, covering this interesting country called Sudan.
Good to have you. Nasreen, always great to have you on The Stream. Please remind our audience around the world who you are and what you do.
Hi, my name is Nasreen Al-Thaim. I'm from Sudan. Normally, I'm a climate activist, but also a social democrat activist and one of the young people who participated, of course, in the revolution and trying to achieve the democratic country.
Good to have your insight on today's program. And Holud, please introduce yourself to our viewers around the world.
Hello, everyone. I'm Holud Khair, and I am political analyst and the head of a think tank in Khartoum called Confluence Advisory.
All right. Guests, thank you for being part of today's show. You need no reminder about how we got to where we are in Sudan's current situation. But for the rest of us, here's a short recap. Let's do a quick timeline. Taking you back to April of 2019, that was when Omar al-Bashir was overthrown. In August of the same year, military and civilian factions agreed to share power. Look at how broad those smiles are, how happy people were. We fast forward to October of last year when Sudan's army seized power in a military coup. And then here we are right now in July where we've had deadly violence in the Blue Nile state. Hiba right now is in the Blue Nile state. She's been reporting for Al Jazeera. I'm going to show you some of Hiba's reporting, but Hiba, can you give us just a brief idea of what sparked those clashes in the southern part of Sudan, before we hear more of your reporting?
Well, it's mostly the issue of tribal administrations. Now, for people who don't know Sudan, the issue of tribes and your administration and chieftain, it's quite significant. It's a source of power, and it's been more so since 2019, because, you know, like, the tribes have been given quite a lot of political significance, and they've been used by certain political groups and armed groups to try to show that they have more power and more influence in certain areas and places. So this whole thing here in Blue Nile started with the fact that, you know, from what we understand being here on the ground, is that the houses, they wanted to have their own tribal administration, and for the tribes that are here, they've been here for centuries, they believe that the houses don't have that right. And then there was also a lot of incitement. You know, we've been seeing videos online, people saying that the houses should not be given land. They have no right of being here. And all of that incitement and all of that anger and tension just exploded. So that's what we ended up seeing, you know, tribal clashes, homes being burned, shops being looted, people being killed and displaced.
Let's just take a moment and have a look at Hiba's reporting on the violence that's been erupting in the Blue Nile state in Sudan. Let's take a look.
This is what remains of Al-Jaili Abdullah's home in Sudan's southeastern Blue Nile state. He's searching for any personal belongings he can salvage. Most were burned in fighting between members of his Hamaj tribe and the Hausa.
We were surprised on Friday morning by members of the Hausa tribe attacking us and burning property, so we had to flee. My brother was killed right here. We found his body hacked to pieces. Now we're homeless and the situation is really tough.
Holud, I'm wondering, so we've got tribal conflict in the south. We've had recent violence in Darfur. We have protesters still protesting against military leaders taking over from a very ordered transitional process. Do they all connect up, or are they just all separate instances that are challenging the people of Sudan in their efforts to get a democratic leadership in place?
They are absolutely all linked up. We saw a very significant spike in the levels of violence across the country since the October coup of last year. So, as you say, we saw intense fighting break out in parts of West Darfur and going along to South Darfur, South Kordofan, Blue Nile. You can almost trace this crescent-like trajectory of violence from Darfur, which will probably now spread to other parts of the country. It has already spread to other parts of the country because, as Hiba said, the Hausa group is a de-landed group. They don't have tribal or group lands, and so they exist in many parts of the country. And this attack, what they see is an attack on them, has led to protests and unrest where these Hausa groups are in other parts of the country. So there's been this spreading of violence like wildfire. All of this is connected to the central politics of Sudan because, you know, the peace agreement of 2020, which was, yes, done during, made during the power-sharing agreement, but was heavily sort of supervised and controlled by the military component, which is now in government. And that has thrown up all sorts of contestations. And more importantly, the fact that these groups are being displaced is leading a lot of people to think that that is intentional, because these areas where these groups are, all the way from Darfur, all the way down to South Kordofan and Blue Nile and in the east, these are the production areas. There is gold, there is uranium under this very earth that people are being displaced from. And so some do think of it as a part of an economic enterprise of certain interest groups in Khartoum and elsewhere.
Nisreen?
Yes, so I totally agree with Khulood and Hiba. And let's not forget that the military is trying to do anything to prove that their existence in power is very much needed and is the only way for peace and security, which is, of course, we know, just an excuse for continuing this liquid situation of the government. I think one of the main problems that we are having and facing in Sudan is the lack of governance and the lack of rule of law. And that's what actually the tribal leaders, they call them civil leaders, but for me, we know that they are tribal leaders, to actually have more influence and more power. And it doesn't need an expert in the Sudanese context and in the Sudanese history to know how much sensitive it is to actually touch this tribal hierarchy and touch the tribe leader or the elders of these tribes. And this is exactly what the people did in order to influence and to burn more conflicts in different areas. And not only, by the way, the Hausa groups, other different ethnicities and different tribes have different problems in Sudan. And all of these are exactly as Khulood mentioned, is impacted by the absence of the central government and the central control in the country in general.
Hiba, I'm just wondering how the current leadership is handling all of these multiple different issues at the same time, as Sudan is challenged in terms of finances and resources and just providing for its people.
Well, provision is quite low at the moment, isn't it? So there obviously is challenges in terms of providing the basic services, electricity, water, you know, proper schoolings, hospitals, those basic necessities that make up a state. The country's always been having challenges in terms of providing that. And it's even worse these days with the economic challenges, with the fact that the donor aid that was supposed to be, or donor funding that was supposed to be given to Sudan was suspended following the military takeover. Now, to this specific conflict here in Blue Nile, when we spoke to people and the military, when you hear both sides, they seem to be blaming the military for not acting fast enough. You know, it started on the 14th. It could have been contained within hours. And obviously, the military does have the power. We've seen that because, you know, we've seen them basically dispersing protesters, firing tear gas at them, firing live ammunition, stun grenades. So we know they have that ability. But here in Blue Nile, you know, both sides say it took them too long to respond. It took them days, not hours, days to respond. People were dying. Properties were being burned. People were being displaced. And there was no reaction. So obviously, they have different ways of handling different situations. And the question here is, why did they take so long to try to contain this conflict, or to try to separate the people who are fighting, the tribes that are fighting, and end this conflict? So people here are asking that question, you know, what is different? Is it because they want to see this tribal conflict happening and they want that chaos
exactly.
to happen and ensure that, you know,
exactly.
if they're not? Yeah. So these questions are being asked here.
I'm going to put to you, Nisreen, let me put this to you.
I guess
because Matt
okay.
who we spoke to earlier, and then you can pick up immediately off it, because it's the same line of thought here. Matt, who we spoke to earlier, had an idea about why conflict was happening in Sudan and the involvement of the military leadership and people who have been supporting them. This is Matt's theory. I'm intrigued by your theory, but let's listen to Matt first of all.
I think it's really important that we characterize what's taking place there as the latest consequence of a political logic that has governed Sudan since independence, whereby security elites in Khartoum securitize and exploit the resources from the peripheries in order to fatten their own pockets. The coup alliance that came to power after toppling the civilian administration in October 2021, they have applied and reinforced the same political logic, making them drivers of conflict in the peripheries.
Nisreen, go ahead.
Yes, as we are speaking right now, one of our young people was killed in Khartoum, in Omdurman to be particular, only a few hours ago. And as Hibe mentioned, this variation of using the power of the government, of the power of the guns, is really not strange, but very obvious that they just want these conflicts to continue. And as they mentioned, also members of the Sovereign Council, the current Sovereign Council, who were actually members of some of the armed movements, the one who actually started this problem. So it's actually started by people who should be the elite of the communities and should be seekers for peace and should be people who are actually advocating for the peace security. It's very obvious, as I mentioned also, that the economical burdens are very heavy on the citizens. I mean, the average weight of salaries is around 70 euros per month, yet the monthly expenses for a middle family is around 400 euros approximately. So the huge gap between the salary weights and between the the prices of the goods and the huge inflation rates that we have in these days, and of course the stress from the political position, where a lot of people think there is no way out because the military is on one side, the politicians are on one side, and there is no light at the end of the tunnel. There is no way of, currently they don't see any way of people coming together and trying to move out from this situation. Yet young people are dying every day, and yet you come and insult our elders and our leaders. So I think it's cultural, it's economical, it's political. The conflict that's happening right now in Blue Nile is just a small example of what's happening in Sudan for the past 6 to 8 months.
Meanwhile, pro-democracy protesters are continuing, and I want to get your take on that. But first, I'm going to go via a sit-in that happened in Khartoum, and this was just a few days ago in July, because I'm looking at the tactics of the pro-democracy protesters, because we spoke to you months ago and they're still protesting. Let's go to the sit-in first of all.
The sit-in is a school for me, where a revolutionary is created. A sit-in is much better than confrontation. At a sit-in, there's a real upbringing for the revolutionary. The sit-ins that took place in front of military institutions from April to July 2019 actually created today's revolutionaries, with their resilience and courage that are now present in the streets. They are a foundational component for the revolutionary and are a necessary tool for peaceful resistance.
How are these protests going generally? They certainly have stamina. The protesters have stamina. Are they making
a
difference? Yeah. Go ahead.
They are. We saw these protests continue solidly, sometimes once, twice a week, sometimes more than that, a week consistently, since October of last year, since the morning of the coup itself. That, to me, shows a very significant opposition to the status quo, as the regime has it. And of course, we know that this regime is purely trying to survive. So regardless of what it says, and recently the head of the Sovereign Council made a statement that he was willing to hand over power to a civilian government, we unfortunately, what he does and what his regime does on behalf of their interests does not follow that. So what we know is, and what the resistance committees and pro-democracy movements, particularly in the streets, have been very sort of astute in deducing, is that actually there's a long way to go. And the more the time proceeds, the more this regime is trying to re-entrench itself and bring about this restoration of Bashir's Islamo-military regime just without Bashir. So we're seeing all the greatest hits. Mm. We're seeing fighting in the peripheries. We're seeing Christians being targeted. We're seeing, you know, rule of law being thrown out the window. We're seeing protesters being killed. This feels very much like Bashir's Sudan.
Bringing back the old way of ruling. Hiba, go ahead.
Well, the thing is, you know, yes, we've seen protesters on the streets, and yes, there have been a lot of persistence. I'd agree with Khulod on that one. But there needs to be, looking back at Sudan's history and looking at the military records, you know, it always has to come from within. And right now, it's not, you know, you've got the military on one side, you've got the paramilitary rapid support forces on the other side, you've got the armed groups that are siding with the military on a third hand over there, and then you've got the civilians on the other, on the fourth side, basically, on the other side of this equation. And then you've got the pro-democracy.
So, we've got a square, right? We've got a square, four parties. This is a hard equation, which is why we're doing this show, everybody. If you've got comments or questions on YouTube, send them to us. Actually, send them to Hiba right now on YouTube. You've got comments. Sorry, I'm just trying to keep up with our 4 points here. So this is complicated. Go ahead, Hiba.
It is complicated, but let's not forget, you know, for Bashir's regime to collapse or at least for temporarily, there had to be change from within, and there was these conflicts happening in the peripheries. Right now, it's tribal conflicts we're seeing in Darfur, in Kordofan, in Blue Nile, but it's not an armed conflict. It's not a full-on armed conflict. So this regime has, I would say, a bit of more lifeline than Bashir's regime, because there is no armed group that they're currently having to fight, because all the armed groups they're fighting is now with them. So it's posing a bit, it's a bigger challenge now to the pro-democracy movement. Back then in 2019, it was the pro...
Yeah. There are two big groups that didn't sign the peace agreement. You have the SLA Abdel Wahid, and you have the SPLM Abdel Aziz, which are actually the biggest groups. And that's why they didn't feel the need or the pressure to join the peace agreement process in 2020. What you have right now is the weakest, effectively, rebel groups at the time joining this so-called peace process, which brought about no peace and isn't really much of a process or an agreement. So actually, you do have two major rebel groups outside of the framework of this regime, and they do pose a threat to this regime. What I think we will see more of is, first of all, more interfaces between different armed groups and groups. Sudan is awash with small arms.
What's an interface? Are they going to chat to each other? Are they going to join up with each other? What does that mean?
Well, I think we will see some realignment. So there could be, you know, certain groups joining with each other, but we could also see new sort of zones of conflict,
alliances.
And new areas of conflict, and new contestations. So there will be some alliances, but there will be also be new contestations because things have changed politically, and that always creates space for competition,
which will make Hiba's equation almost unsolvable. Let me just bring in one more thought here, and then I'll go straight back to you, Nisreen, because we've been talking about the military leadership. So I want to bring in the head of Sudan's ruling sovereign council, because there are talks at the moment between various groups in Sudan, and then the military have taken themselves out of that series of talks that's happening right now. And this was the reason why. When you hear this, Nisreen, I really would like your response immediately off the back of it. Here we go.
I call on the people, especially the youth, to adhere to peace. Everyone has the right to express their opinion, and your sacrifices are appreciated, and your hopes for a democratic transition are fulfilled. Your armed forces will not stand in the way.
Well, we all know that this is a very hypocrite speech, because for many years, the military institute was part of the governing and a part of the ruling component in Sudan, which is a very bizarre situation. But because it stayed like this for a long time, now the military think that they are giving something that actually belonged to them, which is power, to the civilian. And that's why he had this attitude of, we are going out, you agree between yourselves and then come back. And it's just funny. And for me, it's not misleading, but it's actually leading us in the right direction. Because getting the military out of the equation of the government is actually the main request by all of these protesters in the street. Yet Al-Burhan was actually gambling, and he was putting a lot of money in all of his eggs in one basket, which is that the civilian will not agree anytime soon. And I think this is a very dangerous perception, yet it might be true if politicians and right. different groups did not actually reach a formula where delivering the power back to civilians is possible, actually.
Heba, go ahead.
There's been no agreement, you know, like, let's not forget that, yes, it looks like a way forward, because obviously it's clear to the protest movement now what they want and what they don't want. But then again, political groups have always had their differences, right? You know, we're talking about civilian groups, and it's divided into two camps, right? You have Burhan now, who has stepped out of these talks and they're currently suspended. But you also have a side that supported the military takeover, that have actually called for the military takeover. So it's not like, you know, the military is completely out of the equation. They're out physically, but they have their allies. So it's like a proxy presence right now. So, yeah it is still a complicated equation.
Thank you. I was never good at maths. It's interesting having you unpack this for us. There's one more voice I want to include in our conversation. This one comes from Hala. Because you hear about the pro-democracy protesters, what they want, the different factions amongst the protesters. But Hala very clearly explained what her issue and her fellow protesters' issues actually are with the current leadership. This is what she told us earlier.
The women are present in the protest movement with an agenda and with clear understanding that this is an existential battle for them, that they understand very well that they cannot thrive, they cannot exist peacefully with a militarized and militant Islam government that's currently dictating and controlling the country. And we have already seen how the prevalence of violence against women is extremely escalating across the country. Only a few weeks ago, a young woman has been sentenced to death by stoning. This is the type of government that currently we are struggling against as women activists.
Watching our discussion has been hyperbole. What should be done to bring more stability to Sudan? Hyperbole answers their own question. They need to first identify themselves as a country rather than tribes. Another comment, a solution, political education, being realistic about power blocks. It's unrealistic to create ideas because Sudan has so much to lose and currently there's chaos. One more from Ayman. The better solution is to divide the country to federal states, and every state has its own parliament. How would that even work? Now I'm arguing with the YouTube viewers. I'm just curious from you, Halud, what it is like, and you, Nisreen, and just in a sentence, if you could, because we're at the very end of the show, as somebody who is from Sudan, to see this as your country, just a personal view in a sentence. Halud, you go first.
I think Sudan is remaking its state. And I think the coup has always been the vehicle for the largest type of political changes. Okay. So I think the pro-democracy movement needs to hold steady. The changes are coming.
Thank you. And Nisreen, a personal view to end on.
Yeah, I just want to build on what Khalud mentioned. The problem and the question is, at what cost and when the change is coming? This is the two questions that we are trying to actually have a balance between what is actually costing us right now to do this battle this way, and is it the best way to do it or not?
Nisreen, Halud and Heba, thank you so much for your analysis, helping us to understand a very complicated equation of what's happening in Sudan right now. Thanks for watching. I'll see you next time.